listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host for the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this awesome interview with a very cool songwriter. His name is Johnny Mendoza, a.k.a. Luscious. How are you, Luscious?
Hey, doing good. How are you?
Well, let's talk about the name first. How did you come up with the name?
That's a funny one. Me and my best friend, we're both musicians, but we also, our day jobs are working in medical billing and stuff like that. So as you go through all that, you come across some really interesting names.
Right.
So one of them was Lucius Johnson, and ended up tweaking that a little bit just because it's a funny name. So Lucius Johnson, every time someone hears it, you get a little laugh out of them, and it kind of sticks with people.
That's smart. It's smart marketing. So let's go way back to the moment of Zen that made you want to be a musician. What was that moment for you? Was it a song you heard on the radio? Was it a family member playing guitar? What was that moment of Zen for you that made you want to become an artist?
I remember it very distinctly. My dad is a huge classic rock fan.
Awesome.
One of his favorite bands is Led Zeppelin. And we were watching a live DVD of Led Zeppelin performing at Madison Square Garden, I think. And I remember watching Jimmy Page play the opening solo, the guitar solo for I think it was Since I've Been Loving You.
Oh yeah, that's classic.
And he was just a monster on guitar, and hearing it with like the blue lighting on him, he just looked so cool and just sounded like big and sexy and like everything that you imagine like a Led Zeppelin show would be. And I remember seeing that and deciding right then and there, like, I want to play guitar.
That's awesome. And my first question is, have you or your dad seen the new Zeppelin movie Becoming Led Zeppelin?
Not yet. I'm planning on it at some point, but
it's so good. And is you're going to love it. I mean, it's like, I'm a huge Zeppelin fan, and I wanted to see it opening night. And it was so worth it because it was just, I've been waiting 8 months for that movie to come out. And the footage, the interviews, everything is so, it's so great. So I think you'll dig it.
Yeah. So love it looks like it's pretty awesome.
It is really awesome. So you got to take your dad, or you got to see it at some point, because I think it'd be amazing. But let's start. So when did you start playing guitar? How old were you?
So I was about probably 16 or so.
Okay.
So you were in high school. Playing guitar.
You were in high school.
Yeah.
Yep. So what was the first kind of the band music, or what was the first song you learned? Do you remember?
Oh, man. There was a lot of stuff I was learning. At that point, I was kind of just doing it I was learning a lot of punk stuff back then, and like thrash metal and all that, because that's what I was interested in high school.
That's awesome.
Still do, but it's not obviously what I write these days.
Well, I mean, that's always going to change too. It's like, I feel like when I started writing versus what I am writing now, it's always an evolution. So that's what makes it cool though. It's like the journey is an ongoing process of finding out what you love and what styles you want to write in. So you were in a couple bands in Los Angeles, you know, for years. Tell me some of the bands that you started in, and how old were you? Were you still in high school, or did you kind of graduate and then start the musical journey?
Yeah. I think it was right out of high school. I ended up joining a band with my best friends. They were going to community college for music, And I was starting to go down the graphic design journey, getting a degree in that. My best friend like sent me a text like, "Hey, you want to play bass?" I was like, "Not really, but I do want to be in a band, so I guess I'll play bass." And I didn't have a bass at the time.
Wow.
So I just borrowed my friend's bass and his amp, and I was like, "All right, I'm playing." And those first shows were kind of hard to watch looking back, just because it's my first time performing in front of people and learning a new instrument and everything, even though it's not that different from guitar, but it is. It's like a whole different beast. But
it's actually become one of my favorite instruments to play. I don't play it live a lot.
Yeah.
I play a lot on recordings. I feel like coming up with a bass line is almost as gratifying as coming up with a good lyric or melody, because it's like if you come up with something and it doesn't sound like anything else, but it's reminiscent of other things, it's the coolest feeling, you know? So,
it can make or break a song.
It can make or break a song. It's like I was watching this, this footage of the Beatles in 64 when they first came to the US, and what Paul McCartney's playing on bass and singing, it's so good. You know, it's just
talk
like,
about a monster bass player.
Talk about a monster bass player. I met Paul McCartney. I got to sit in a studio with him and talk music, which was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man. Like bass is like one of those instruments where it can make or break a song. It's not what most people notice right away, but the band notices it right away. You know, if somebody's gone, it's like it'll fall on the bass player or the drummer's shoulders first. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Before everybody. So you started playing in this band. What was the style of music?
So that band, I'm still in that band to this day. We reunited again.
That's cool.
Our name was Order 66, which for all you Star Wars fans out there, you know the name.
Well, I'm a Star Wars fan, but I don't know Order 66. Is that the is it the
that was the executive order to annihilate all the Jedi?
Oh, that's right.
But that band's a hard rock, more like punk metal kind of stuff, like a combination of the two. Pretty good, a lot of fun.
And you guys all must be Star Wars fans, I assume, correct?
Oh, yeah. Big time Star Wars fans.
I like the dark side of the Force kind of represent the band. That's rare, you know what I mean? It's like cool, though. It's very cool. So tell me, like, you started rehearsing. You know, a lot of people don't know what it takes to kind of, like, put on a show. Tell me what those early rehearsals were like. Tell me what went into them. How long were they, and how did you formulate songs together?
Starting out was probably not as conventional as most bands. We ended up, they were already kind of jamming before I had entered the picture. But there was maybe two songs that they had written at that point. And then after I joined, they booked a gig for like 2 weeks out from when I joined.
Wow.
So we only had two songs, and it was like a half hour set opening up for another friend's band at this music store. And so we had to come up with an entire set list in that 2 weeks, write it, and then practice it.
Sometimes that pressure is good. I feel like pressure is an underestimated force when it comes to creativity, because deadlines are good and they're just great to shoot towards, you know?
Oh yeah. And being ADHD, like I operate real efficiently when it comes to deadlines.
Yeah. I think the pressure of like, oh my God, I don't want to look like a fool in front of an audience is a big factor to just get shit done, you know, and just make it happen. So
yeah, exactly.
You guys got like a whole set of music in that time together?
Yeah, we did. And it was my first show that I have ever played.
Wow. What was that feeling like? Tell me what that was.
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
Very terrifying. So I was looking at some of the old pictures, and I am in the same pose in the same spot on the stage the entire show in every single picture.
That's awesome. Like, well, that was your comfort zone, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I was just like, trying my best not to fuck up or
That's part of it. It's like it's nerves. It's like you find like what is like safe to kind of just like kind of rest and kind of like focus. You know, sometimes I find little spots in the venue that I can focus my energy towards, whether it's a person or it's a post or something about me, or maybe looking at, you know, just people just dancing or whatever it is that you can focus on, because it just helps to kind of like ease into the whole practice of what it is that we're doing, you know?
Yeah. Yep. And now, nowadays I'm just all over the stage at this point. So especially awesome. With that band, with being high energy.
We're Did you play any LA venues when you were here?
I've played mainly local to the Antelope Valley with that band.
Okay.
We've played in LA and Ventura a few times, and then did like a West Coast kind of mini tour thing.
That's awesome. Where did you play on the West Coast tour? What cities?
Where did we play? We played somewhere in middle California and then up to like Portland and Seattle. I think we played at Vegas at one point. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, we had some pretty good spots that we played at. A couple of them ended up being on like Kitchen Nightmares being shut down afterwards, but
that's awesome. Well, tell me, like, how did you guys tour in the early days? Did someone have a van? Did you have to rent a van? Like, I'm always curious because we always had to rent a van. I have a 6-piece band, so it's like we'd always have to. I know all the tricks. Like, take the bench at the back out, put the cooler in the middle, like right next to, you know, the in between the two front seats, and that way everybody's comfortable. But how did you guys first tour early on?
We ended up, one of the bands we co-toured with, their singer bought a van for like a few grand and fixed it up and everything. And he was like, hey, let's go on a tour. So we were like, yeah, let's do it. And he had already like made some connections along the coast to start booking. So we all like band together and made it happen. And we all shared that van, which was a little cramped, but you know, it got us to where we needed to go. And we were mainly planning for like
the van. It was probably like 10 people, 12 people.
So we had 4 people in our band, and then I think 4 in the other. So there was 8 people in the van.
8 people plus gear. Did you share gear?
We shared, like, I shared a bass rig with the other band, and then the guitarists brought their own stuff.
Well, it's usually good, like, share drums, share a bass rig. But I've had drummers who are like, no, I got to bring my own kit. It's like, okay, we're going to have 2 drum kits. You know, like, that's always crazy. It's like, whenever we headline a venue, I make all the drummers share the kit. It's like, nah, everybody's going to share. It's going to make the turnaround so much faster, you know?
Yeah.
So it's hard, though. It's like, you know, when you tour, you don't necessarily plan for everything. You have to, but you don't necessarily get that opportunity where it's going to be easy to, you know?
Right. And all of us are like pretty good at coming up with stuff on the fly and everything, because we ended up blowing the bass amp head.
Oh my God. Really?
Right before one of the shows.
So what did you do?
And we found a guitar center like nearby. Just went over there and got like the cheapest used amp that we could get.
Wow, that's crazy.
And, brought it back to the venue.
How did you find it? You found out at soundcheck that it happened?
Yep.
Wow, at least you guys found out at soundcheck. I had one time, I remember this was at the Mint early on in my career. It was like, I think my third or fourth show. And the amp head fell off in the middle of the show. No. And then just started smoking. And luckily, one of the other bands, the bass player was just about to leave, and he's like, okay, man, use mine, you know? And so we plugged that in and it was all good, but it was just the craziest. It was like those little hiccups, you can laugh at them later, but when you're going through them, it's like, oh my God, it's like panic mode. It's like, what are we going to do? It's the worst, you know? It really is like the worst. So you found a used amp head, came back, and did it last the rest of the tour?
Yeah, it ended up lasting, and the other bass player was the one that bought it, so he got to keep that. But no, it was a lot of fun and just a lot of, like, in a way, problem solving. Because those gigs, like, we were getting paid, but we were basically getting paid, like, gas money to the next venue, you know,
right.
And in free drinks or free food. Right. So, and then they would let us, like, stay in their parking lot overnight.
Wow. So you guys slept in the van?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow. How did you do that? Who got the seats? Who got the floor?
We ended up making the back seats of the van, like, we converted it into, like, bunk beds.
Wow.
So, like, just makeshift bunk beds made out of, like, 2x4s and stuff. So we slept, not well, but we slept.
I mean, it's one of those things where you're going to wake up earlier than you want to. You're not sleeping in the comfort of your bed. But then there's also a feeling of, like, okay, we're in this journey together. We're my band is old. Like, we're all, like, we need hotel rooms. Like, that's just going to last happen. We used to do a lot of Motel 6s. And then it was, like, as soon as, like, we started making more money, it was like, okay, we can do hotels that are better now. So we do better hotels now. But
yeah.
In the early days, man, I joke with the band still. Like, those early days, you are just trying to make it to the next gig and get enough sleep to, like, put the energy into the next thing. I always wish I had a crew. I'm sure you guys felt the same.
Like, oh, yeah.
I'm always envious of bands that have crews. It's like, we just did a
private event. So much easier.
Yeah, I just did a private event on Saturday, and, man, I went and loaded. I had to load the PA into my car and then, like, take it to the venue, set it all up, break it all down after playing for 2 or 3 hours. I was so beat. I was like, man, I'm getting too old to not have a crew. But there is some gratification with, like, if I do it myself, I know everything's going to be put away correctly. Everything's going to be in order. Everything's going to be in working order. So I'm sure you guys felt the same. Yeah. How did you guys, how long did you guys go on tour before you started snapping at each other or just like realizing, like, this is hard to be in close quarters like this, doing long drives and then performing with no sleep?
I think it was when we were at the tail end of the tour, there was some snapping and nitpicking and stuff going on.
Yeah.
Mainly between the other band. They couldn't really hold it together at the end.
Wow. Because they've been doing a lot of touring. Is that why?
I think it was just 2 weeks because we were on the road for about a week.
Right.
But I don't think they had done it that close to quarters before and that jam packed. So it just, like, ended up wearing them down and their drummer ended up leaving.
Wow.
On the last gig. So they broke up on our last gig of the tour and basically told us, like, you guys can play for as long as you want. We're not going to be playing the show.
That's great. That's great.
So, yeah.
And now you've been kind of doing your own music. Like, you still play with that band, but what made you want to do your own music, your own songs? You were in a couple bands. So that band was one band. Did you kind of start playing in other bands with other guys?
Yeah, I moved closer to LA and started playing guitar in a band called Ad Hocs.
Okay.
That one's more like an indie, like, yacht rock kind of band, three piece. I played guitar and did backup vocals, and then we had a lead singer that was playing synth and a drummer. So no bass player.
What made you decide to do that? Just having synth bass or something?
In a way, yeah, because the piano and the synth sounds were kind of taking over that lower frequency. And when we were playing live with the three-piece, because we did, like, experiment with auditioning bass players and stuff, and we found it kind of changed our sound in a way that we weren't happy with, or maybe we just didn't find a bass player that meshed with us that well.
Yeah, that's a lot of it. It's like you have to find people that have the same vision, you know?
Yeah. So we just ended up opting for a three-piece and made things easier for us. But that was a fun journey in me writing guitar parts and writing guitar parts that I'm not used to writing. I was using more like major 7 chords and 9 chords, like more jazzy kind of sounds. Cool. And it was a lot of fun. I had a blast with that. It also taught me like more about singing and stuff like that too, with the backup vocals and all that.
That's always the hardest. It's like when people are playing and singing background vocals, I feel like that's a very underrated role in a band. And when people can do it, I'm always like, I always watch players when they're like doing like arpeggios and like singing backup. It's like, that is not easy. It's probably one of the hardest things, because you're going against the lead vocal, you know, you have to match. It's like a weird part of the brain that you have to kind of like compartmentalize music, which I actually find super fascinating, because it's like, I actually feel like when I'm thinking about certain frequencies or vocals or even what I'm playing, I feel like there are little compartments in my brain that I'm feeling the sensation or the concentration going into to kind of like make sure I'm doing it correctly. Because it's a weird thing how music works. It's like somewhat spiritual, somewhat mental, somewhat physical, and something else, you know, that is like a little bit of magic, you know? So,
yeah,
you know, there's something about like how you gel and work together. So when you were doing all of that, what was that? Were you enjoying that role, or were you like, I want to be in the front and I want to write songs and control more of what this is?
I think it was a mixture of both. It did make me more comfortable with being more up front. And I hate to say that I was that annoying guy, but like, I was also like the band member that like, I had a mic in front of me. So every time there was breaks between songs, like I would kind of like take over on the mic and say some lines and stuff like that, and like banter with the singer and stuff like that. And, but, you know, it made me more comfortable in front of the crowd as, like, a personality.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it kind of led up to, like, what I'm doing now.
Okay, so, like, let's talk about that. So, like, when did you kind of make the, like, initiative? When did you take the initiative to just start writing songs and just start doing your own thing?
I've always been experimenting with songwriting, even while I was in those bands. But I didn't really take it seriously until maybe 3 years ago, something like that. And, started booking like gigs at like local breweries and, like restaurants and stuff like that, that are hiring for entertainment for 3 hours. So,
yep.
End up like doing half a set of, or like, because I split it into three sets. So I do like two sets of covers and one set of originals. And, you know, I was kind of learning songs to get by and everything. And so that I started doing that maybe like 2 years ago. Okay. And getting used to that format.
Well, it must have been different to start playing acoustic too. Tell me what that transition was like.
It wasn't too difficult. I learned guitar on acoustic, so I already had like that feeling down. I knew what to expect with playing acoustic, but I was applying more of like more complex chords and stuff like that to it, and doing that with vocals on top. Like you said earlier, like that's a whole animal. Like you have to think in two different styles. Split your brain in two, essentially. But I don't know. It wasn't too uncomfortable for me. I got used to it pretty quickly. There's definitely been like hiccups here and there where like I'll play a show and I'm nervous about this specific show, and then it'll kind of translate into my performance a little bit, which isn't the best. But yeah, I try to keep that to a minimum. But
well, let's play something. What do you want to play us first? You want to do one of the live ones?
Yeah, sure.
Artist choice. You tell us which ones you want. Which one you want to play first?
We can play. Let's see. Let's do Submersible first.
All right. Here's Submersible by Luscious Johnson. Thank you. very cool. I like all the chords. And that little arpeggio sounds almost like very reminiscent of Hotel California. There's some cool little lines in there.
Yeah, thank you.
Tell me how you came up with the song and what was the inspiration behind it?
That one came out of a more political leaning. After the Titan submersible imploded with those people on the inside of it, it's kind of where I drew that inspiration from, and it kind of made me think of like how I feel about that situation. Because there's a lot of mixed feelings for myself personally in that, because obviously some like people losing their lives is a tragic thing and terrible. But also I have strong feelings about people that are in that like billionaire class that are using their money for all of these types of things. And
you're talking about the submarine that they went on the voyage, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
That never to return.
Yep.
Pretty sad. Pretty crazy. That.
Yeah. Wild situation.
Yeah.
But it made me think about class war and stuff like that as well. And these people that get to do these types of things and lose their lives doing it, compared to people who are surviving with no recreation whatsoever in their lives and in survival mode constantly. So different ways of losing your life in a way. And it's comparable to like people who live in land and people who are down in the sea. So,
right. Well, I mean, it's such a crazy notion to say, hey, we're going to go on this voyage that very few people in the world will ever be able to see. And there's a little bit of hubris that goes with it too. It's like,
yeah,
they just don't know that they're up against forces of nature that would advise against some of this stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just one of those things where, you know, I don't know if I had that kind of money, if I'd even want to do something like that, because it just seems like you're playing with fire. It's like, I'd rather go to an exotic island and be, you know, there for a week, you know, instead of,
yeah,
it's just crazy. Who I really feel bad for is the 18-year-old kid who went.
Yeah.
On, you know what I mean? Yeah, like he had his whole life to live, and this is probably his father's. And, you know, he was like, oh yeah, that sounds cool, let's do it. And it cost him his life. It's like, that's a tragic situation, the whole thing about it.
Oh yeah. And just to think of like what kind of life you have to where this is something that you do, and like a way that you can lose your life.
Right. Right.
And not even think that that's going to happen. So
no, it's crazy.
It's a whole different world.
I like that you chose that to write about. Like, did it strike you that there was just like the dichotomy of social classes, or was it just like the fact that you didn't know that there was a group of people even taking a trip like this, and then now that it's, you know, affected so many lives and lives were lost, you figure how crazy this is to do something like that, you know?
Yeah, it's always been something that's on my mind and that I think about a lot. I mean, growing up with not the best living conditions and financial situations, like, you're kind of in a way forced to think about stuff like that, like what your life could be and what other people's lives are and how you want to strive to make your life better than what it is. And to learn to be happy with what you have. But it's something that's always been on my mind, and it took, in a way, is kind of ironic as well, I guess. It took that tragedy to make me want to write about it.
Right. Yeah, it's weird how things like can strike artists, you know, like I find that peculiar too. How like maybe it's something somebody says, maybe it's something on the news, maybe it's something that you're just feeling from a relationship, whatever it is, and it's like all of a sudden it changes. Okay, this is like there's a live energy to it that I have to write about. You know what I mean? I love that you kind of took that moment. How long did it take you to write the song?
Maybe a few days. I find that's how I write best, is when I take something that is very striking or shocking to me emotionally, and it just makes it that much easier for me to write when I'm feeling that, and I have to be in that feeling to write it.
That's so cool.
And when I'm in that feeling as I'm writing, it just kind of comes out. I don't know how to explain it, but it's...
Well, let's play something else. We have Stella Marie. Well, tell us a little bit about this song before we play.
So this song is a very special song to me. Speaking of writing and it just coming to you, this is another one of those songs. I lost my mother to her battle with cancer.
I'm sorry.
2 years ago. Almost 2 years ago. And I wrote this song for her as I was driving back from the hospital when I was spending the day with her.
Wow.
So as I was driving, I was kind of like, I don't recommend this, but like opening up my notes and like writing down lyrics and stuff that were just coming to me. And I was, my dad was like asleep in the back seat.
Wow.
Just like coming up, like a melody popped into my head as I was feeling all these things, and the words were just kind of coming out with the melody. And it's one of those like songs that are just kind of magic and falls together.
I love that. Let's check it out. Here's Stella Marie by Luscious Johnson.
This one's called Razor Blade.
And let it guide in everything.
Very cool. Tell me what the chorus lyrics were. It said mother, and then I didn't.
Yeah, mother, please believe me when I say that your son has found a way to take every loving word that you spoke and let it guide him every day.
Wow, that was great. That's why I got chills, man. That was poignant. I could tell when it said, you said, believe me, right? You said, mother, believe me. And then I lost like what you were saying just because of the video. There's, you
know, yeah, like, not the best quality, but.
All right. You know what, though? But that's what made me want, it was pulling me in. I was like, I got to know what those words are because I know you're saying something so vulnerable and honest and in tribute to your mom. You know, it's like, that's something everybody can relate to. Have you recorded that song yet?
I'm in the process of that currently.
You definitely record that song. That's something that everybody with a mom can relate to, you know? Whether they're living or past. It's like, that is a really beautiful message. Really, really cool vibe.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So tell me, you wrote it on the way back from the hospital, and then did you kind of like piece it together at home? Did it take a couple of days? How did that kind of like spill out of you?
Yeah, that exactly that. I pieced it together while I was at home, figured out the guitar parts that I wanted to accompany my vocal melody, and I kind of stumbled across that that guitar riff. That little melody that I have.
I like a lot of your guitar riffs. Like you can tell that you were in a band that had arrangements. You know what I mean? Because think about arrangements when you're writing. I think that's important. It's like, it's really hooky stuff. And it's like, it's a guitar player's like interpretation of guitar lines, which is what I love. You know what I mean? It's like, it's like a singer, like, telling you the line and then you're like playing it. It's like something really organic that you kind of find on the guitar and you piece it together like that, you know? Really
cool.
Did you get to play it for your mom?
I did, actually. The first time I played it was for my mom.
Wow, that's amazing.
And we were taking care of her in hospice at my grandma's house. And after I was finished with it, I told her, like, I have a song for you that I want to play for you. And that was the most difficult performance I've ever had to play in my entire life.
I bet.
Wow. Just trying to keep it together while I was singing those words to her. Wrestling a bear.
I mean, but you know what? That must have really like touched her very, very deeply. Like that must have been very special for her to hear, you know?
Oh, yeah. And like, it's still very difficult to even think about that and just reminiscing on that moment. It's just, I'm glad that I had it.
Yeah.
Well,
that's why you got
so not glad that I had to have it.
Of course. Like, I know you would exchange that song to have more time with your mom, but what's really cool is like, she got to hear it before she left. You know what I mean? Like that's really poignant. That's important. That's kind of like why music exists to me. It's like, we're messengers. And it's like when you can deliver that message and tell a story, and especially when it so hits close to home like that, I mean, that's powerful stuff, you know? Really beautiful. That's going to be a hard song to beat, man. I'm going to tell you.
That is one of the songs that when I perform it live, people come up to me afterwards and like they'll come to me with their stories of like, say they lost a parent or something.
Right.
And, or they relate to it in some kind of way. That one for sure always gets someone to tell me their story. And that's awesome. Something I really like about that is that I'm getting to hear other people's stories too.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, we have a rough mix of one of your next songs, a studio track. Right. Tell me what went into this and what was the inspiration behind it.
So this one's called Take Me Home. It sort of stemmed off of a series of songs I wrote after getting divorced. It was just me writing about being vulnerable emotionally, feeling kind of raw and like dealing with these difficult like decisions to be made. And like, it wasn't a terrible divorce, but like, you know, going through it, like it's a life-changing thing. And like any life-changing thing, there's big decisions you need to make and different directions you need to take your life in. It's just a fork in the road. And for me, Take Me Home was kind of a song about going through that journey and that emotional journey of where you want to be after the dust has settled. And yeah, it's really as simple as that for this song.
All right, well, let's hear it. Here's Luscious Johnson with Take Me Home.
Please just take me home. I won't stray from anyone that leads me on to wherever that you may roam. Please just take me home. Winter skies, they make me wonder why your eyes, they seem to wander to the prize. Please just take me home, far away from everyone. Let me run from all the judgments you may hold. Please just take me home. Winter skies, they make me wonder why your eyes, they seem to wander from the prize that just take me home. Please just take me home. Please just take me home. Please just take me.
A solid song, man. What a great song. Really, really great. Loved it.
Thank you.
So I love that you just made it like you and an acoustic guitar. And that was it. What mic did you use? Do you remember?
I don't remember what mic it was.
That's all right.
It was a little while ago. I'm not really too savvy in all of the tech behind it, but
that's all right. That's part of it. You know, it's like I produce a lot, so I always like love good acoustic guitar sounds, and that was just a well-recorded acoustic guitar song and vocal. So it's really honest, really great. Where can people find you if they want to find you online and want to listen to your music?
So my most active account is on Instagram. It's Luscious Johnson Music, and you'll find like live videos of some of my past performances on there, as well as show updates and where I'll be performing next, and I keep all that there. And I'm currently working on an EP with five songs on it. That was one of them. That's a little preview of that. I'll be uploading that to all streaming platforms once that's done. So
very cool. We look forward to more music from you. And man, thanks for sharing your story and your insight and your journey with us, because this is what this show is about. It's funny. It's like, I have a lot of artists that have been around for a long time. I have a lot of artists in the middle of their careers. And one of the most important parts of this show is we feature artists in the beginning parts of their journey too. And even though you've been in all these bands, this songwriter journey for you is starting. And thanks for sharing it, man. It's really, it kind of like reminds me of what it takes to kind of get things moving and get things going. And it's important. So yeah, man, it was great. So on behalf of Luscious Johnson, AKA Johnny Mendoza, and myself and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Peace, love, and hair grease.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.